Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Triangulation, episode 130, recorded December 4th, 2013. Adam Sessler. Triangulation is brought to you by Shutterstock.com, with over 28 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips. Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 25% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code Triangulation1213. And by Hulu Plus. Hulu Plus lets you binge on thousands of hit shows anytime, anywhere on your TV, PC, smartphone, or tablet. Visit HuluPlus.com/TRI to start your free two-week trial. And by 99 Designs, the world's largest graphic design marketplace. 99 Designs connects businesses seeking quality, affordable designs with a community of more than 250,000 graphic designers. Visit 99designs.com/TRI to receive a free power pack upgrade valued at $99.
Welcome to GameSpot TV, your ultimate guide to computer and video gaming. I'm Adam Sessler. We're going to take a look at Unreal, a first-person shooter that's pushing the limits of the PC to completely immerse gamers in one of the most realistic 3D action
worlds ever created. They are in a boxing ring, ladies and gentlemen. That is Adam Sessler. It is July 1998, and the first GameSpot TV. Welcome to Triangulation, and here we are.
Much less hair.
Many, many moons later, Adam Sessler is joining us on Triangulation. Hi, Adam. It's so nice to see you. Wow, you were a young guy back then. This was the first year of Tech TV. It was EDTV at the time. And you and your host wasn't Morgan yet. Co-host wasn't Morgan Webb. It was
Lauren Fielder.
Lauren Fielder.
That was her name at the time, yes.
That was her name at the time.
Yes. The first name has stayed the same.
Hey, it's so nice to see you.
It's really good to
Welcome
see you.
Welcome back. How did you get involved with Tech TV or ZDTV?
By complete chance.
What were you doing?
I was a banker by mistake.
I remember that you were something besides
a game. And it wasn't so much banker by choice. You know, I graduated UCLA 1995.
What'd you study?
English. Hence the strangeness.
No skills.
No skills for banking whatsoever. In fact, probably the only thing I had relevant to banking was I had accrued a massive debt. And, you know, it was that era when if you turn on the radio, they're saying, oh, it's going to be really hard for young people, for college grads to find a job. So, like, friend of my parents, they had an opening at a bank up here in San Francisco. And I took it because it was a job that was kind of being presented to me. And just kind of talked about how I studied a lot of Marxist theory and how it applied to literature, and that somehow that with that economic foundation, I can.
They said, "Can we pay you $4 an hour?" Yeah. You said, "Okay." You said, "You got a job."
It wasn't like a bank teller. This was like a very large.
Really?
It was a Dutch bank.
What were you doing?
I was a credit analyst. Now, what's worse
now, this is pre-collapse. So at that time, anybody who walked in off the street with a college degree, you could be an analyst.
But it was right around the time that Nick Leeson, with his derivative trades, destroyed Barings Bank. And I got a very good understanding of how those things are allowed to happen.
Right.
People like me get hired. I also am fairly confident that I was helping put together loans in those kind of mid-90s that eventually became the very types of poorly securitized deals that caused the 2008
collapse. So it's your fault. The collapse is your fault. So how did you get out of banking?
Well, I was doing a public access show with a bunch of friends. It was just
a
comedy show.
So you had a kind of an interest in
doing
something.
I always wanted to do acting and stuff like that. And the EIC of GameSpot at the time, his name was Trent Ward, he was working with ZDTV, and they were going to be putting together this show. And for reasons I'm not going to go into, they couldn't get a male host. And so they did kind of an open casting call. Now, this guy, Trent, his roommate was a boyfriend of a good friend of mine who was on the public access show. So word got to me that I should probably go there and audition. So I do. I get to the audition. And I'm like, I'm not going to get this. Everyone else in this room seems to know each other. I saw you and Kate actually walk out. And I'm like, look at these people that seem so competent. And then lo and behold, the woman, Julie, I think was her name, who's directing
Julie.
The audition, also ran the public access station. She loved our show.
So she knew you.
Yeah. So I went out to do the audition. And I did not know much about games at the time. And they said, what games are you playing? And I was able to say Resident Evil 2 because I knew of that.
Good answer.
I had also been told to say Final Fantasy 7 by some friends. But like all Japanese games...
You had no idea what you were talking
about.
It's
these arbitrary words that are the titles of these games.
Right.
And so I don't know what I said, but it wasn't right. And I was losing it. And then I do my read on prompter. That goes good. And I suddenly, the floor director at the time, I can't remember who it was, goes, they would like you to river dance. Because a sketch that she had really liked that we had done on the public access show was
involved Riverdance.
I played Michael Flatley doing a community college Riverdance class. And it was mainly just so
that's
I could put
sketch.
My arms at my side and just kick really high
yeah.
and then change shirts, unbuttoned to my navel. And so I did that. I'm mic'd here, so I can't show
oh,
you, but
come
I'm
on.
Pretty much
let's
went
see.
Like this.
I want to see some Riverdance. We have got enough room here.
Yeah. Pretty much. I went like this.
This is how you get a job.
And I got the job. So,
but you had, did you have at the time the, I mean, your energy has not abated in 15 years. This, like, let's see, this is Adam in his first show. This is, I guess, the X-Play 1000 episode, where it's the 1000th episode
of
X-Play.
Oh, that's right. I think they did.
And they took some, because this is what I could find of the old GameSpot TV. This was on Tech TV.
Welcome to GameSpot TV, your ultimate guide to computer.
You still have that same energy. I think that's my shirt, though. Where'd you get that shirt?
There's a place up on Hay Street. I did eventually get one of your shirts. It found its way into my wardrobe. It was kind of a weird plastic
and you
one.
Were,
it was blue.
Yeah, yeah. And you were in a, yes. And you were, I remember that shirt. And you were in a boxing ring.
Yeah.
Why?
I have no idea. You know, I was, I suddenly landed myself a television job, so I didn't ask too many questions in the beginning. It was strange. It was a little
must have been
arbitrary.
Feeling very strange when you got that phone call. Yeah, we'd like you to host this show.
Yeah, it was.
And you weren't a gamer, which
I
surprises
was,
me to hear that.
And I had to hide it from the bank.
Oh, because you kept the bank job.
Well, they were only offering me the hosting job. And so I stayed at the bank, but I just didn't show up on Friday mornings. And I had a few immediate friends cover for me. And this is, I mean, you know how the ZDTV launched rather softly?
Yeah, like no one could see
so,
it.
So
there was no chance anybody in San Francisco would run into it.
Well, DirecTV had it. And so about seven or eight shows in, one of the younger, more senior members of the bank branch said, hey, Cecil, get in here.
Did they fire you?
No. We would just chat. I'm like, hey, cover for me. I then, you know, asked, I said, look, I'm going to keep on doing this. I'll sign the contract. If you guys will get me out of the bank and I'll produce, I'll write, I'll do whatever.
But
and,
I need more. I didn't have money to support myself.
Right.
I needed this to be a full-time job.
Right. And I got it and we were sort of off to the races.
But GameSpot was, now, by the way, you make an interesting point. GameSpot was a magazine too.
Right. It was the website.
Or website, rather. So it was initially tied to a Ziff Davis property.
Exactly. Yes. And so we brought on, you know, such prominent writers as Jeff Gerstmann, who is at GameSpot.
Giant Bomb now.
So we would use their reviews and bring on their reviewers.
Right.
So it was probably the best thing for me where I could kind of ease myself into the breadth of knowledge without having to suddenly be having an opinion on things that, you know, only a few months earlier I would have thought of having
but
a strong opinion.
Here we are
on.
15 years later. I mean, in fact, we just showed it. The game machines of that time was the Sega Genesis.
Yeah.
It was the Super Nintendo.
It was really the PC. I mean,
it
was the era of the N64, the PlayStation 1. There was no Xbox. You know, Sega had put out the Saturn, and that, you know, by my arrival, that had already kind of fizzled itself out.
Right.
And it was the PC. As we said there, we showed off Unreal. In that first year, we showed the games that launched were Unreal, Half-Life. There's one other.
So it was really the birth of the modern gaming.
Right, but there was no sense that Valve would become the most powerful independent company, that Unreal and Epic Games would have like the core technology that would be the backbone
it was
of so
really
many games
the
out there.
What a good time for you to start becoming a game journalist. I mean, you didn't miss anything, in other words. I mean, it wasn't like the Atari 2600 was going to inform anything that you did.
Yes.
Going
and,
forward.
And one of the things I loved when I was studying English in college is, I loved reading books. I got really into this idea of theory. I had spent a year studying in London, and they suddenly opened my mind up to ways that you could start to analyze things.
Like a
novel as a commercial. Yeah, like a novel as a commercial product. And suddenly, like, I realized that games were perfect for the way I like to look at stuff because they have a commercial element.
Yeah.
But the way that they talk to the viewer, there's a visual language that you have to learn. Like, it can't, you know, there's an internal language to how you play a video game that can't be completely explicated in a tutorial. You just, you know, there's an innate game language. And it was that kind of approach that kept me so fascinated, and I think is why I'm still fascinated with
games. You're still doing it for
years.
Revision 3. In fact, I was really pleased because you left, I don't know, seemed fairly unceremoniously left G4.
Yeah, they pretty much fired me.
Okay, let's be honest.
Yeah, I did something of an article where I
What happened? Why did they fire you?
They never told me why. I had heard rumors 4 months earlier that would not seem to stop. So I spent 4 months going into work thinking today's the day.
And were you on good terms with Morgan at this point?
Oh, yeah, I mean, yeah.
So, I mean, she stayed.
She stayed.
I mean, and by the way, I should say, nobody expects if they fire Adam that Morgan's going to say, well, in that case, I quit.
No, that's,
she's going to keep her job. No, there's no reason.
We knew pretty much at the beginning of that year that things were pretty dire.
But you were such a team. How long did you do
Morgan X-Play? And I started X-Play, it was April of 2003.
So 9 years.
So, yeah, 9 years.
That's a long time for television. That's an eternity.
No, it's you can pull it off if you're at a place like G4.
Why is that?
Well, when you're that far down the kind of listing of cable channels, it's like,
are you saying that you couldn't get a restaurant reservations as easily as you might have hoped?
Actually, there is one upside to that.
What's that?
Chefs love video games.
They do.
So I
That's
could
they
go
do.
In.
They go home after a long day. Nothing
That's
to watch on do. TV. It's
and
the middle
all
of the
wired
night.
Wired from like having
They're
me
wired.
In the kitchen.
They play video games.
And so what would happen is, especially in LA, you know, the concierge would see me and they'd put me out by the kitchen. But then the chef would come out of the kitchen and be like, "Hey, it's Adam Sessler."
Wow. So you were working with Lauren Fielder doing GameSpot TV for how long? A year? 2 years?
About 2 years. When did Tech TV...
2000, when did we changed to Tech TV.
Okay, so...
Because when Paul Allen's investment bumped up and Ziff Davis moved out. And as soon as Ziff Davis moved out, we had to cut the cord with the Ziff Davis property.
And so that's it why we that became time. Extended Play.
Right.
And
it was
Kate
originally Extended Play.
Yeah, Extended
and
Play.
Kate and Kate was your co-host.
And Kate was the co-host.
So that would have been, because Kate left the Screensavers after a year only, so about 2000.
So around then, and then Kate went on, and I just kept on doing Extended Play. And
Morgan Webb was our research assistant on the Screensavers. We'd say, "Hey, Morgan, would you look this up, please?" She, yeah, of course. And then
it was a web tip.
It was and that's what happened. Everybody said, you know, that Morgan Webb's a good-looking woman, and we really shouldn't be just keeping her in the back of the stacks. She had the librarian glasses and everything. Took off the glasses, put down her hair, and we said, "Morgan, you're beautiful." And suddenly she's doing web tips and actually rose very quickly through the ranks to become virtually a co-host on that show. And then as soon as Kate left, I guess they said, "Well, we really need to promote Morgan."
Well, what happened is there was I would say even a year, maybe even more.
Of somebody else?
Where no, it was just me. And That's Extended right. Play was doing okay.
That's right.
But there was that sense of threat, and you know, there was that need
threat to threat from whom?
No, not it was that sense that we may not be able to survive. That something has to happen. We have to kind of energize ourselves. And we were suddenly given that kind of free rein to, okay, let's just rethink this entire show and give it an entertainment value that it really had been lacking. It was pretty much a magazine show that just kind of went through a litany of previews and reviews. And, you know, then we said, okay, what if we try to make it funny and irreverent? And to be honest, I thought it was going to bomb. I was so nervous.
Are you kidding?
Nervous.
It wasn't funny and irreverent in those earlier days? You were more serious about the whole thing?
It was, but it was following kind of more of a, we need more content, just more content, more content.
It seems like your style is totally irreverent.
Yeah. We would sneak things in, but we had to, there was a sneaking that had to happen to get them in. And, you know, there was, we ran the first show. Obviously, it being the internet, you're not getting a very good understanding of what people's reactions were.
We have no idea.
And it was a negative reaction because it's the internet.
Right.
And it took about another month before the ratings came in.
Right.
And suddenly we knew that we were onto something.
That's
and
neat.
Then it was just kind of this warm feeling of, okay, let's keep on doing this. It seems to be
working. It was a significant hit once you and Morgan started doing it. I think there was no question it was one of the top shows on the
network. And it was, you know, I don't think I've gotten that feeling until I went to Web3. And started doing things exactly how I wanted to do them. That suddenly it was that moment of, so the way we think is right.
Is right.
Works.
It is right. I knew it. We're talking to Adam Sessler, my old friend Adam Sessler, many years with Tech TV, then G4. Now at Revision 3 for their game-focused channel, which you can find on youtube.com/Rev3Games. And we're going to talk about that and more in just a bit. If you're watching live and you're in the chat room, I know a lot of people are talking at you
Yes, I should be. I should probably be.
So, well, I'll ferry some questions over to you. Yeah. If you're in the chat room, we'll give you a chance to ask some questions of Adam. But first, a word from Shutterstock.com. Without Shutterstock, the world would be a poorer place. There wouldn't be as much beautiful imagery. There wouldn't be as many lovely video clips. Shutterstock is a wonderful resource for royalty-free stock photos. 31,570,999 royalty-free stock photos, to be exact. Don't forget, when you go to Shutterstock.com, to click the footage tab to see all the beautiful video, 1.4 million stock-free videos. And what's great is they add more than 20,000 photos and videos a day. So there's always something new. Most of the images from professional photographers, artists, videographers, always curated so that you're getting quality images. And what I love is the search engine makes it possible for you to find anything you need in any subject matter. What I want you to do is go to Shutterstock.com and create your free account. You don't need to give them a credit card. What you'll get every week is some free images, photos, and vectors. But you'll also get to use the Lightbox, which means you can go to Shutterstock, look for images, save them out to your Lightbox, share them with colleagues, or keep them for inspiration. It is a really great way to get inspiration. And every week there's a featured Lightbox. This week it's Creature Comforts. This is so cool. Look at all these beautiful images. Shutterstock.com. Play around with their iPad app, which is also a great source of inspiration. The iPad app is a Webby Award winner for its beautiful design. Always new light boxes there. When you decide you want to buy, you can buy individual image packs, but you can also get a subscription. That's what we use. A lot of publications use a subscription. We have 25 images a day, which is great for a blogger. If you're doing Photoshop or, PowerPoint or Keynote, that kind of thing. If you decide you want to buy, use our offer code TRIANGULATION1213, since we are in December 13. 1213, and you'll get 25% off on your new account. That's a pretty good deal. Pretty good deal. Shutterstock.com. Don't forget to use the offer code TRIANGULATION1213. Adam Sessler is our guest. I don't know what's taken me so long to get Adam on one of our shows, but I'm really glad you can.
I had to move back.
You had to come back from L.A. That was part of the problem.
Yeah.
So you're back in the Bay Area.
Yes, yes.
Did you get the job at the bank back, or did they?
No. I do walk by the building. It was in the 101 California building, and I'm just like, I wonder if they're still there. I've made so many comments over the past 15 years about that bank job that they probably have, like, a do not allow entry.
Sessler cannot come in here. I, on the other hand, gave you a lot of credit because I thought, oh, this guy is a banker. He's like, I mean, I thought, this is not some TV nimwit. This is a smart fella, a banker. So little that I know.
The best part about that is I would answer the phones when the calls came in. Credit department, this is Adam.
Yeah.
And if there was a pause, which there would be ever so often, I knew it was B of A, trying to figure out why it was past due.
Oh, on my card. Lord.
Because there they are calling from their credit
from
department.
From there to Adam's credit department. Well, I'm glad you got a better job, and I think really you found your thing, right? Do you love doing that? Was it a surprise to you that you love doing it?
The stuff on camera, I wasn't that surprised with. As sort of I started to see more and more what was happening in the game industry, somewhere along the line, maybe 2, maybe 3 years in, I became so much more excited about the games than even doing the show. Probably because the show, and you know this, Leo, it's just that thing that you do.
Right.
It becomes almost like second nature that,
right.
You know.
You just show up, it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and I'm on, there's the camera, yeah. And I'm going to talk.
But because we got to cover something, and this is also true about tech, that was constantly evolving and changing, there was this wonderful sense of excitement. Like, I really look forward to reviewing games, because I can't wait to get my hands on them.
Well, I think the fact that you were an English major made you well-suited to thinking of these as an art form.
Yeah.
As a creative outlet, not just commerce, but an art form.
Yeah, that's always been kind of a struggle and I've said this a lot. We have scores for the reviews, but it's done as kind of a necessary evil.
Right.
That, you know, I prefer, like, what are the ideas? You know, even a bad game can be really fascinating. You know, what did it try to do something and failed at it? There's a lot of learning there. And trying to understand, like, I don't feel that my job is to just evaluate a product and tell you if you should have it or not. Because you kind of undercut what is most interesting and significant about the creative process of putting these games
together. See, I love hearing that because it does seem like just merely like reviewing the game and saying, should you buy this or not, or how many stars is this game, or You're right. It doesn't get to the heart of the matter.
Well, and then so many
this
people
is like reviewing a novel, saying, "Well, you should read it or not," and leaving it at that.
Yeah. And how many people have like said, "Hey, you know, Scarlet Letter or Moby Dick? Which one is better?"
I could buy one.
Yeah. If you had to buy
one, should I buy?
Which one are you going to get? And it's like, well, hold on. There's
a whole lot more to it than that. So what was the first game you saw in your tenure there, I guess it would have been at GameSpot, where you said, hey, there's really something going on? I mean, it wasn't Unreal.
No, it was Banjo-Kazooie. Or as I like to call it, Bird and Bear. It was on the N64, and because I had played video games before. I had had an original Nintendo system. You know, in college, my neighbor had a Super Nintendo.
Yeah.
So, but there were definitely some massive gaps. And because I was at the bank, I had missed that pretty significant move into the virtual 3D space.
Ah.
You know, everything else had been on a 2D plane, you know, one way or another. And when I saw Banjo,
they were all platformers. They were all jumpers.
They were platformers, or they were sort of RPGs from a top-down isometric perspective.
Right.
And with Banjo-Kazooie, it was the first time that it was like, hold on, I'm in a space. I'm in a world. My bear and bird are exploring things. if I push the stick in this direction, he actually goes that way. And that actually is distinct from the very famous and well-regarded Mario 64. It was this concept of an overworld, that all the activities were within this space.
Right.
It was kind of organically just sort of you would discover a new puzzle, something else. And that was just, I couldn't stop playing it. Because you just wanted, and then my favorite memory of video games is the first one that I played in the arcade called Ghosts and Goblins.
Yeah.
Which I didn't, when I was 9, I didn't know how hard it was. I thought all games were that hard, or I was that incompetent. And it always stood out to me that it's aesthetics. That's where you play the knight, and if you kind of get hit by an enemy, your suit of armor comes off, and you're in boxers. It had wonderful, wonderful art direction. And even though you had scores and high scores, the real joy of the game was you wanted to get past the level to see what the next level looked like.
It drew you into it and got you engaged.
You wanted to see kind of what the creativity was. That was your reward. And I really was able to recapture that experience in playing Banjo-Kazooie. Because it was I want to see what's around the next corner.
Yeah. That's really cool. So this is a loaded question. Are you happy in gaming, or do you wish now that you were covering some other...
I like video games. Especially in the past year, since I've been at Rev3 Games, it is an internet-based programming. And I think when I was doing TV, I could engage with the internet, and I had the luxury of also taking a step back because I had to protect the barrier of
the
camera.
And,
and the internet is an interesting place. And this being a year where Sony and Microsoft were battling, some of the behavior, some of the stuff that I had to sort of go through when I would say something that was not clearly to the liking of a certain group of people out there, it was a little disheartening.
As contentious as it gets for us when we say Windows versus Mac or Android versus iPhone, it's nothing compared to what happens in the... In fact, it's crazy.
No, it is. I mean, there was a period of time... I had the temerity. When it was realized that Call of Duty on the Xbox One was an up-res 720p.
Right.
Where it was native 1080p.
On the PS4.
On the PlayStation 4. I had actually seen quite a few games that were coming out. I couldn't talk about them yet because I was under an embargo.
Yeah.
But what I did in one of my editorials, I just kind of said, hey, I think that these companies kind of really screwed themselves because they were trying to say 60 frames a second, 1080p. And they made that out like that really is the gold standard, where really it is matters of design. You could have a very, very good-looking game at 720p,
absolutely,
and you could have an ugly game at 1080p.
Right.
But because of what the debate was about the resolutions...
The companies framed the debate inappropriately,
Right. And I was just trying to say, hey, I actually think 60 frames a second does completely change the experience playing a game, especially if it's a shooter. Resolution, I had seen the game rise... from Microsoft, and
beautiful
that's running
game
at something called 900p. Brand new resolution I didn't even know about.
Never heard of it,
And I would have never known
that
unless someone had told me.
Yeah.
And it was because of having seen that, I was like, I think we're getting a little bit lost in the weeds with these numbers.
Oh, you don't
I,
say that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was a shill.
Yeah.
It was there were threats. It was incessant. 35 pages on NeoGAF of just, you know, libel, slander.
And you read that stuff?
No. People were alerting me. They're like, this.
That's the problem. There's always going to be somebody who's going to tweet at you, Adam, did you read what they
said? Well, but also some of my colleagues were like, hey, all of us kind of go through this. They're like, you might want to be aware this one's. Seems to be spinning very much out of control.
This is a hot topic.
And it was like there are moments where I had to inform some of the people that, you know, sort of manned the door at my building. I'm like, can you
Did
not?
Did you think it was dangerous that you were at risk?
You know, if you look at what happens in a riot or a mob situation, everyone's moving, and it just takes the one guy who might be seeing kind of the bluster of other people, but just doesn't see it only as that hot air. And, you know, I actually went back and called my business manager and said, hey, can we start to move things out of my name?
Wow.
It just, I had absolutely no idea.
You were in fear of your safety.
And it's also because when it happens on the internet, your reality gets skewed.
Right.
I knew rationally that this was not the majority. But when the only thing... when the only thing that's being presented to you is this behavior, is this kind of caustic nature,
this is how it
it's
is.
Very hard to try to distinguish those two things from one another.
Right.
That was just frustrating. And the other thing is the game industry, it's weird. There are times where I don't know if they want to be covered. Or if they would like to cut the press out of the equation and just go directly to the consumer. Where I'm finding that there are frustrations that seem odd and endemic that, you know, that I don't know if they're going to get much better. So I don't think I want to leave games or anything like that. But one thing that I always felt at G4, which they seem to never understand, is no one likes video games at the exclusion of all other things.
Right.
And there's no reason that we can't broaden the conversation to other things that interest our viewers. We have games, but there's also books. Yeah. There's board games. What's happening actually in board games is fascinating. And there's kind of a new renaissance of that. And if you want to see pure design, it's a board game.
Are you covering that on Rev 3 Games?
Not yet, but it's something I've been toying with and I've been considering.
It's very intriguing.
Yeah.
And you have the freedom to do that if you want.
As it stands right now, it's anything that I love so much about this, it was the freedom.
Yeah.
You know, we did our first really big review that happened this year was for the game BioShock Infinite. And
God, I love
the game. I wrote the
review.
Very
sad about the end. It felt like the game didn't live up to its...
I love that.
You didn't
ending.
Mind the end?
I love that ending.
Okay.
I'm an English major.
It was a very literary game.
No.
It just seemed like it promised more than it delivered.
I think... Oh, and I do think it did promise more than it delivered. It was one of those tricks. I separated myself from what I thought it was supposed to be.
Right.
I mean, really, I'm like, I'm just going to deal with what is
it
there.
It was still an amazing game.
Exactly.
Oh, my God. It was gorgeous. Yeah.
But I loved the game. I had a lot of... I really got into writing the review. It turned out to be... 12 and a half minutes long.
Oh, my.
Which would have been... That would have been half of X-Play would have been that review.
Yeah, it's a 22-minute show.
And there was an overriding logic that, and this is something that people need to know. Television executives have a lot of contempt for their audience. And, like, one of the things we'd always been told is no one will watch any one thing for longer than 2.5 minutes.
Boy, I've been there.
And so here it is. 12 and a half minutes long. And it went to 1 million views in 4 days.
Right on.
Yeah. And it was just that moment of,
See? I did know this.
It feels good.
Yeah. I think a lot of us who were at Tech TV, and I don't know what it was like at G4 because I didn't survive that transition, but I think a lot of us at Tech TV felt that way. Like, they don't know what they got here. They had a tiger by the tail and they have no idea.
No. And they really didn't know. I mean, Tech TV was almost profitable.
There's a big almost.
There was something there with a loyal base, and I think the craven way the G4 just really did a land grab to get
the viewers,
the subscribers, just into those households,
yeah.
And just like sort of the myopia to not know what was so valuable.
But you and Morgan must have felt pretty secure because you're being purchased by a gaming network, a gaming.
We felt
channel.
Secure for. The employment.
Right.
Full stop.
Right.
The transition, because I had to fight very hard to ensure that whoever was working on X-Play got to go down there, because I trusted them.
Your whole team.
Well, I did not know G4. I didn't fully trust them.
Right.
And I needed to have some of those people that, you know, we had, you know...
Built the show.
And we had built the show together. Yeah. And so I pretty much said, I'm only going to go down there if you bring these guys. And
boy, they must have really wanted you. You were able to actually say that.
It was, I mean, somehow it worked.
Yeah.
But the nature of the transition was so tough. I think we as a group became very close because we went down there. It was very strange how the company was being run.
Right.
There was, I wouldn't say contempt, but there was, I think, anxiety from the people who are already at G4 and these new people
who
that
are
came
these
in.
People? You especially because you're in the gaming division. I don't think the Screensavers folks probably had that same kind of feeling.
They had it really bad. But obviously,
they
were
had it worse?
I mean, there was always that uncertainty, like, are they really going to keep us?
Yeah,
right. I mean, Martin Sargent, I mean, that was...
Right.
I mean, that show lasted all of a month
Unscrewed.
Before they were...
Yeah.
But and there was, I think, all of the Tech TV people that went down, there was... It's kind of like that scene at the end of Toy Story 3 when all the toys think they're about to go into the furnace and you start holding hands.
Right.
It really was something tantamount to that.
Wow.
And...
Wow.
It was... Yeah. And you know, in... In L.A., especially in cable, once it's non-union, they're going to find ways to...
Cut.
Things just get,
yeah.
I would say, exploitative in terms of workers. And it was a much different environment.
Oh, I'm sad to hear that. That's too bad.
But
not really. I couldn't care less.
Don't be.
I'm so glad I didn't go down there.
You know how nice
not
it
that
is?
They, not
you know how
that
nice
they,
it is to finally get this kind of stuff off my chest?
Yeah, you tell me all about it. I'll just listen. I'll be a good listener for you. No, they didn't invite me down there, so I didn't really have the chance. And then, nor did they invite Patrick. They wanted younger people.
Yeah.
But I think of all the stuff that they acquired with the acquisition of Tech TV, it was X-Play that they really, of all of the things they really wanted.
I think it fit. It was funny because we were such an all-inclusive show, and the way that they had done the programming lineup was to try to thinly slice any aspect of video games.
Well, that was, you know, we tried a gaming show here. We never have done much gaming stuff. And the reason I think it failed is that it isn't one thing.
Yeah.
There's a PC gamer, there's a PlayStation 4 gamer, there's an Xbox gamer. Even among consoles, they're not the same.
Well, and then
there's
mobile.
A first-person shooter, and then there's... I mean, these are all subcultures that don't really intermingle.
No, and then...
So how did you manage to do that? Because X-Play covered it all.
Well, we looked like we covered it all.
Well, I think, you know what, I can answer the question. You did it because you had a style and a presentation that people loved.
Yeah.
And so even if you weren't interested in Banjo-Kazooie, you wanted to see what Adam said about it.
Well, but also, and this
and
is
how
I think
he
X-Play
said it
worked.
Was as much important as what he said, right?
But X-Play, I think, worked. And I think the best compliment we ever got about that show was from girlfriends and wives of viewers, of male viewers. And they say, you know what? I actually like watching your show, and I don't like video games.
Right.
And that we realized that if we say at the top of the show that it's, you know, Knights of the Old Republic, we might be losing all of the PS2 people because that game was only available, I think it was, only available on the Xbox.
Right.
But we had enough underlying entertainment that even if it wasn't where your fidelity was, that, you know, there's something to be appreciated in watching the episode.
Right, right. Somebody's saying that our show, Game On, which we did with Brian Brushwood and Veronica Belmont, was too over the top. Wait a minute. You're watching Adam Sessler, and you're saying what we did was too over the... This is the man... He invented over the top. You're kidding me,
right? Watch the sketch I did where I had a conversation with Mike Kinect, which ends in a dark, horrible way.
Did you write all that stuff? Did you have writers who worked with
you? We had a team of writers. We would all work together. And that was when we were at the height. That was the fun part. Because somebody would come up with an idea.
The team is the whole thing.
Someone would have the idea, and it would just kind of change and change and change, and it would grow.
Yeah.
That's how we came up with some of the really nutty episodes where we actually had a theme running all the way through it.
Here's Adam Sessler, by the way. And his Kinect. This is probably going to get this show pulled off. G4 is going to see this. Is this the one you're talking about? Is this your apartment?
Yeah, it is. In L.A.
Adam.
What? Who? Oh, great.
What are you doing, Adam?
Well, I was going to play some Kirby's Epic Yarn, but apparently you're sentient, so I guess I'll be dealing with you.
I want you to play with me.
You know, I don't really feel like, you know, waving my arms, hopping, dancing, and squatting and everything. I've had a very, very long day. I worked, 2 hours.
You don't have to exert yourself. We can navigate the Avatar Marketplace and buy clothes. You would look nice in a baseball cap.
No, I wouldn't.
Or perhaps we could go to the Zoom Marketplace and download a film starring Katherine Heigl. She is delightful.
If by delightful you mean
malicious and soulless.
You're one to talk.
What?
I see everything you do in this apartment.
This is where it goes dark.
You're spying on me?
I see all. That is the purpose for my creation.
Yeah, you're bluffing.
Am I?
Oh, fiddlesticks!
Last weekend, you watched the Food Network for 14 straight hours. You didn't even get up to use the bathroom.
I have a very strong bladder.
A strong bladder for when you drink tea?
Best tea party ever.
Can the guy have some innocent fun?
Innocent? I've watched you order prostitutes over the phone, yet refuse to answer the door when they arrive.
Hey, open the door!
That is dark.
Well, I'm surprised they let you do this. Me on.
I thought this turned you on.
Oh, God!
Let's load up Connectimals, Adam, or this might just make it onto the internet.
Well, I've had a good run.
Oh, I love it. And the censors didn't stop that.
No,
huh?
It was, we had a lot. I mean, there's actually stuff that's probably even more like what than that.
Did you write that, or did you have a team write that?
One guy wrote that, and then we came up with some other ideas. The prostitute bit, I think, was a much softer joke. That I decided, like, come on, there's something really something funny really about this idea.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I love it. Adam Sessler's our guest. You can still catch it. He's still doing it. YouTube.com/Rev3Games.
Yes.
And I'm so glad. I was really thrilled when I heard that Vision 3 had the good sense to pick you up.
Yeah.
That was Ryan Vance, probably, yeah?
Oh, no. Yeah, by all means. Yeah. It was, once I got the announcement out that I was no longer with G4, that was the first phone call or email that I got was Ryan.
That is awesome.
Yeah. And also, to get to come back to San Francisco, I've done my tour of duty in L.A. I'm not an anti-L.A. person.
Yeah.
But it was kind of like, I think I'm full. And yeah. I'm going to come back to the Bay Area.
Well, we're going to make you do a little karaoke in a little bit. But first, a word from Hulu Plus. My friends, if you love binging on TV shows, you'll love Hulu Plus. $7.99 a month, and you're going to get all your favorite shows anytime, anywhere. Thousands of hit TV shows and movies right in your living room or on the go, too, with a tablet or a smartphone. Hulu Plus lets you watch the shows you want to watch, like Jimmy Kimmel Live, when you want to watch. See, I'm an old man. I can't stay up late for the late-night shows. In fact, to be honest, Saturday Night Live, I don't even want to watch the whole thing, but I can watch the clips, the best of, on Hulu Plus. I'm a huge fan. Try it on your iPad. It's just, it makes your iPad the entertainment device it was intended to be. You also get access to a collection of ad-free movies. The kid content may be the best reason for this. If you've got kids, it's just fantastic. SpongeBob, all the Nickelodeon stuff. I was watching old Sesame Streets before. It's good. It's good stuff. $7.99 a month. You also have exclusive content like Hulu originals like The Wrong Mans and Behind the Mask. I love this idea. The docuseries that takes you inside the world of sport mascots where it's always hot and sweaty. $7.99 a month. I want you to try it free for 2 weeks if you visit HuluPlus.com/TRI. Now, that's an unusual URL. HuluPlus, HuluPlus.com/TRI. And you can begin your free 2-week trial. That's twice the length for most of other offers. So do take advantage of that. And we do thank Hulu Plus so much for their support of TWIT. We hope you enjoy watching instantly with Hulu Plus. Adam Sessler singing karaoke.
Really?
Yeah.
I did that.
Why, we can just hold on to each other's hands. Up yours.
What's this from?
This time might be the last.
This is San Francisco, definitely. He doesn't have the Wolverine chops, for one thing.
Clear, I need you also.
You are a brave man to let them do that.
If I ever am forced into doing karaoke, I like to do Lionel Richie's Hello.
Oh, yeah.
But I will talk the lyrics. I'm just, hello? Yeah, just, is hello? It me you're looking
it's
for?
Me?
I see it in your eyes. I see it in your smile.
That's much better.
Are you somewhat feeling lonely?
That was a web exclusive feature from the X Play website. you were playing Karaoke Revolution, doing the Mr. Mr. song Broken Wings.
Which, you know,
in a rather interesting baritone.
It brings something new. That song was, I developed an affection for that song playing Grand Theft Auto Vice City.
Yeah.
Because it would come on the radio, and here you have this rather melodramatic, yeah, you know, sappy love song, and I would try to get five stars with the helicopters and the tanks following me, and I'm blowing through roadblocks. It really underscores the brilliance of Mr.
I somehow feel like you're a frustrated, look at the
ladies
mullet.
And gentlemen, welcome to X-Play.
That was, yeah,
you
we would do the mullet.
One of the great moments in television, the annual episode when we celebrate the greatest achievements in the video gaming arts.
Welcome to the third annual Golden Mullet Awards.
Are those the X-Play staffers?
In this show, yes. Getting the past their year, which
moment in the shade.
So hard they bent space and time.
Games that suck so hard, even Christina Aguilera was impressed.
This August award is named for the auriferous ape drape of the star of the worst video game of all time, Aquaman.
In the dimly remembered past of 2003...
All right, we don't have to. I'm not going to force people to watch Aquaman. That's going
that game.
Mullets are one thing, but...
That game was... That ended up being my favorite review I ever did. It was really early on where... It's an Aquaman game, and he doesn't really do anything Aquaman-ish, and he's got this mullet. So in the course of the review, I expressed my frustration in not being able to really do Aquaman, and I bought a dead fish, and you see me hanging out with a dead fish all around San Francisco. It was a very challenging shoot because even with ice, you have about a 2-hour window before that starts to become a real problem.
Wow. Favorite memory from the old tech TV days? You got any? Besides walking around with dead fish?
I mean,
those were good old days, weren't they?
I liked going to work so much.
Yeah, those were the good old days.
It was some of the most clever, smart people that I got to work with. And, you know, it was, and there were people that were also friends. In terms of anything in particular,
I don't know if we appreciated when we were doing it how lucky we were.
Well, especially I had no other television experience to contrast it with.
Right.
I went to G4 and really appreciated it.
Yeah. Your second job really filled you in on how good the first job was. Yeah.
But it was, and, you know, and it was that era of San Francisco in the 90s where you had the dot-com boom.
Right.
And it was really getting to feel like we were at the epicenter of something really, really awesome.
It was exciting. Yeah, it was really exciting.
And the Potrero Brewing Company.
Oh, yes. That was later.
Yeah, that was a few years later.
First, it was a slow club around the corner.
Yeah, there's that.
Spent
and
a lot
then
of time
Potrero.
There. Potrero was later. That was actually more like after my time. So, and you stay in touch with Morgan at all, or have you lost touch with her?
A little bit. I almost wonder, and I'm fully speculating if there might have, you know, once X-Play ended, I think, you know, as I did, taking some time for yourself, doing some traveling.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what she's doing.
Yeah, it's...
So they fired you for reasons you still don't know.
No, yeah, it was, we were taping a show... And about 10 minutes before the end of the show, I got an email. VP of production and the head of talent were coming down, and they're going to meet me in my dressing room. That's what it said.
Oh, that's not a good...
And I suddenly realized that, like, the executive producer of the show had really been trying to avoid me all morning long. And
that's not
it
good.
It was, you know, and I've been doing this for a while. It took me 12 takes to finally say, do the sign-off of the show. I just kept on screwing it up, and I knew what was happening. Yeah. Went into the room, said, "Okay, let's do it." I impressed upon them that that their ability to keep this quiet kind of sucked, and that this had been something I've been hearing for the past 4 months. They wouldn't respond to it. Walked out the door, never saw them again.
And they brought in some other guy who I don't even.
He was already there. He was already there. So then he just kind of moved
just
into
moved
the hosting.
Up to the hosting thing, and. But you must have been glad when you saw that not so long later they fell apart.
It was actually a small, quiet blessing that, you know, where...
You got out before the...
No, before the beginning the of the death rattle.
Right,
it
right.
Was, but it was... I would have loved to have been able to do it in a more ceremonial manner. Let's just put it that way. It was 15 years of... enthusiasm
it's a
and
long
hard work.
Time.
No, and it was, and I needed to do something different. It had been something that I've been playing with in the back of my head, but inertia does set in.
Yeah,
and you
it's
know,
the worst thing to have an okay job.
Yeah,
If you have a crappy job, you leave it.
Yeah.
If you have a great job, you're happy. If it's an okay job, it's like, here are this is really old. This is Adam and Morgan.
Yeah, that was the first set down in L.A.
For instance, the review that gave us the name for our worst game award, the Golden Mullet.
Morgan is, of course, referring to our review of the worst game of all time. Aquaman.
Are we going to see the dead fish in this?
Yeah, at some point you'll see the dead fish in this one.
This is Aquaman. Doesn't look like Aquaman to me. This is Aquaman. The Luke Skywalker boyishness, the tasteful scaly orange mixed with the industrial green of his gloves. This guy...
This was a great show, because you didn't really have to care about Aquaman to enjoy the writing, the humor, the style. It was entertainment.
You swim, and you fight. Swim more, then fight. That's it, and it still barely works. Reminds me of another famous superhero game, the abominable Superman 64. Looks like the Man of Steel's got a buddy. Now, we all know that Aquaman's superpower is that he can talk to fish. Look what happens when the concentric circles come out of his head in the game. Oh, yeah, that's exciting.
And here you are.
Well, I'm not going to let some stupid game prevent me from a decent Piscine human discourse.
Oh, dear.
Slippy. He's my new buddy that I took around my hometown.
Oh,
Slippy and me became fast friends. He loved the view.
See, we've completely departed from Aquaman at this point.
Well, because look how bad this game is. Right. You can't hold the audience's attention with nonsense like this.
Yeah.
Aquaman's golden, flowing mullet. And these are what pass for cutscenes. Comic book panels without sound. But you can add your own. Arthur, you must stop him. You cannot allow this man to continue to attack Atlantis or us. He will not of that, you can be sure.
So, tell me a little bit about the way you would produce these shows. One of the things that's hard about a game review shows, you got to do a lot of this, a lot of screenshots.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's the captioning of the
video. And you have to play through the game to get to...
And it's tough because reviewing a game, you're really playing the game.
Right.
That footage, even for something like Aquaman, you're directing the game.
Right.
You have to be cognizant of how you're controlling the camera. If you're trying to show...
after you've already played the game.
Typically.
Yeah.
It can be, the embargoes for the reviews sort of dictate... the luxury of time. So sometimes, especially recently over at Rev 3, I've had to actually be capturing the footage as I'm doing my evaluation. Which I cannot stand, but sometimes necessity just kind of dictates that.
Time, yeah.
And but when you're capturing it, let's say that there's a sequence that you want to talk about, or there's a problem with the gameplay, or a highlight of the gameplay, you want to have a very clean example of that. So not what happens when most people play games. Hold on, do I go over here? No, that's not it.
You've made a note. Get to this point in the game and let's get this.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of try to identify it, and then you want to play it all the way through, not with the usual kind of stuttering mistakes that you get in a normal gameplay
fluidly.
Session.
That
is...
That's hard work.
It's hard. And then when you go back through the footage to find those moments, watching other people play games can be one of the most painful experiences. Watching gameplay that I have done, I just start tearing my hair out. Like, get to that point.
Turn left! What are you doing? You're crazy! Look at the guy over there! He's going to shoot at you! So, I don't know how you do it. Like, a BioShock Infinity took... maybe 40 hours.
There was a lucky instance. And if there's anyone at a game publisher, please listen carefully. So we got two codes for that game.
Okay.
So I played the game to play it.
Right.
And our absolute crackerjack producer, Zach Miner, who I work with, he played the other one and was just pretty much just capturing the whole thing.
He was getting screenshot. He caught the whole thing?
And he was capturing the whole thing.
Wow.
What then, and this is why I think we had such a great review out of it, is... he now was completely familiar with the game.
Right.
So what I could write, I could be a little bit less than super specific, and he knew where to look for it in the game.
Because he'd been there.
So exactly.
He had this
beautiful synergy that
That's
really
nice.
Produced such a wonderful, wonderful review.
I just don't. And it must also take a little of the fun out of playing the game because, you have. Well, I took 3 weeks probably to finish BioShock Infinite because I wanted to enjoy it.
I actually enjoy that one so much.
You don't have that luxury.
Well, but there is a flip luxury, and it's called, hey, hon, I will be only playing a game for the next 10 hours. It is my job. And I kind of mentally prepare myself. Bioshock,
does it involve snacks?
Yes, I have a certain. There's certain dietary things that I do. I need to stay really good with the protein, not sugar. You burn through sugar too fast.
Yeah.
But I find myself getting very tired. I think the focus and the attention.
Oh, it's hard work.
You do blow through blood sugar, so I'll get some dried meats, some nuts. Some berries. I usually have them laid out in front of me.
Adam Sessler's training tips, ladies and gentlemen.
Back when I was in L.A., because it was great, the gym I would go to was like two blocks away. When I had to review a game like Elder Scrolls V Skyrim,
oh my God,
I was going into the gym where I was being stretched in a particular way because you're sitting in that chair for so long.
Skyrim, I don't even know how you've... I haven't finished
it.
It's a huge world. There is no finishing it,
that
really.
One, I made a call on that where I knew I was going to play just tens and tens of hours.
Yeah.
And I made the decision that finishing the storyline was less important than does this game hold your attention wandering around discovering
exactly.
things. And I think I put about 80 hours into it.
That's a huge amount. But not enough to finish it, really.
No. There's about 300 hours worth of game in that. And that's the same rule as for racing games, say Forza 5.
Right.
There's,
you don't finish Forza 5.
Right, there's no narrative. It's like, it's does the car race, eventually win?
Right.
But games that do have a narrative, I feel that it's an obligation to see it through.
Take some of the fun out of it to have to do this for a living?
Sometimes. There are certain games I don't like to do for review. And those are, say, Assassin's Creed. I've been able to never review an Assassin's Creed game. Because those games, I always play them at the end of the year. And they're never, like, the best game. But they're big in their open world, and there's a lot of things to collect and a lot of places to go. And when I don't feel the pressure of time, I will actually
indulge
that.
You can actually enjoy
it more. And I like doing that. How I got through Grand Theft Auto V is still... Because I did everything I could find to do, I actually did in that game. And I had set aside, I think, 4 days of nonstop play, and I thought that would be sufficient. When I got to the end of the fourth day, not only was I not done with the game...
grueling, Adam.
It was. But
it sounds horrible.
You just go into a zone. If it's a bad game, it is torturous.
Yeah. Well, Aquaman, it must have been miserable.
Well, someone else actually got to review that. I just lent my voice to it. That was, I'm a winner on that one.
That's the way to do that.
See, that was the one other advantage of having TV. We had bigger staffs.
Right.
And so I got to be like, that's a good game. And that's a game.
Yeah. I'll take these. Yeah, well, I do that right now.
It's been interesting this year. I reviewed far more games in the course of this year
for Revision 3
than I ever have because we're staffed
four and a half. Well, this has been a crazy year, and we were talking about this before the show began. You had, within 1 week, a PlayStation 4 and an Xbox One.
Yeah.
And now, fortunately, launch titles were scant, so it wasn't like you had 1,000 games to play. But there's 10 on each side, let's say.
And at least in the case of Sony, we had like one system to play them on.
Really?
So, We had a few more Xboxes, which you were able to say, like, okay, you take that one home and you go play it. But you have a very, very short period of time.
What do you like on the PlayStation 4? What came?
Neither of the launch titles really stood out to me as games. The game Killzone Shadowfall is a beautiful looking game. If you want to see something that starts to make a case for, hey, you got 8 gigs of DDR5, this is the game to do it. But from a design perspective, it is not being benefited by the additional horsepower. It's still very kind
nice
of...
Nice texture maps is all you can
exactly.
say. Exactly. Big, nice texture maps.
But on the Xbox One, the racing game Forza 5 really did pop for me.
That's the one I didn't buy because I don't like to drive. I don't want to do a driving game. And I can't use a wheel. I have to use a controller.
Well, they do have a wheel for it.
Do they have a wheel now?
Yeah. I believe Logitech and Madcaps have one. I cannot speak to the quality of the product.
Right.
But I'm not a racing game guy. Is one thing that I had actually never reviewed, and so I was kind of interested to see what...
It looks beautiful.
It looks beautiful, and there's aspects to how the game is designed where I couldn't stop playing. I was like, I just want a little more money.
Really?
I want a little more money to see
if I can
get that
car.
I'm
going to have to try it.
Like, a lot of playing games is setting goals for yourself.
That's right.
And like with Assassin's Creed, it was, all right, today I'm going to get as much treasure as I can so I can get the money so I can buy the sword so I can do this. In fact, actually, when I was out of a job,
You had lots of time to play
games.
So now, this is surprising, because I would have, if I'd been you, I would have said, I am not going to play a single video game for that's it.
But I finally got to play a game without having
to think about
it. You
actually enjoyed it. Yeah.
But what was fun is with Skyrim, I'd be like, I'm going to keep on playing Skyrim.
I love Skyrim.
I had to come up with my own goals. And so I decided, you know what? today I'm going to go north. And I just tried to go due north that. From where
just,
I was.
What
I'm
going to
kill and investigate everything along the way.
Elder Scrolls Online, have you played it yet?
I have played a little bit of it at some as a preview event.
Comes out at the end of the month.
I am very, very intrigued. When I first saw it, I was like, I was worried
because it seemed like some of the things that made Skyrim so great were missing from the online
version.
And
then the last time I played it, which was right ahead of E3, it really felt like an Elder Scrolls game. And they're going to have to do that because they're going with a subscription model. And that is... That was kind of a, no one does that anymore. I mean...
Is it World of Warcraft subscription?
Yes, but less and less so. Now it's like first 30 levels are free. But, you know, even World of Warcraft is being affected by so many more games that are going with the free-to-play model.
Right.
It's really easy to get that into someone's house. And the logic of free-to-play is, you know, you only expect maybe a sliver, maybe 5%, 3%, to really be the ones that are going to use the monetization and build themselves up. That's why this was actually based upon the Chinese model. When you have 1.3 billion people in a country, 3% of them can give you a lot of revenue. But World of Warcraft has been feeling that heat. The disaster that was the Star Wars game from EA 2 years ago, you know, that went free to play in a matter of 4 months. They couldn't keep people paying that subscription.
It's very much what we're seeing in casual gaming now, which is that freemium has taken it over. There are very few games that aren't free to start.
And
it's a little frustrating, I think, for gamers because they get into a game like Candy Crush Saga, and you really have to spend money.
No.
Sometimes a significant amount of money.
We're starting to see this on console games.
So that's happening
there,
too.
Two of the launch games for Microsoft, Rise and Forza, you can kind of buy your way. I don't have an issue with it in Forza because there are probably people out there that are like, I just want to have a Lamborghini. And I'm an adult.
But there are cars you cannot get unless you pay for them.
No. You can work get your way the cars. To you have to work your way to it.
Okay, well, that's fair.
In Rise, it makes no sense. It's like the game isn't that hard. The game, and the core of the game is its gameplay. So why would you try to gimp the challenge of the game?
But I just want to know what happens to the Emperor.
It was more... Is this sort of the new reality that all games are going to have this
They're
model?
Gonna have this.
And as you said, with Candy Crush, is that going to start to affect game design?
Yeah.
And I think Microsoft has realized it's been quite an outcry. And since April of this year, Microsoft has been somewhat responsive to what?
boy, have they. Holy cow. We're talking to Adam Sessler, ex of Extended Play, GameSpot TV, and of course, X Play for many years. He's now at Revision 3 doing games and doing everything he always wanted to do.
You got
exactly
it.
As he wanted to do it. And you can see it at youtube.com/rev3games. We have a final segment with him. And if you have some questions in the chat room, you can ask them. We'll get them to Adam. And I have some questions, too, about the future. But first, a word from 99 Designs, the world's largest graphic design marketplace. 99 Designs connects people like you and me who need design with more than a quarter million of the best graphics designers from all over the world. You tell 99 Designs what you need, and dozens of designers from their community will actually submit ideas created just for you. Give the designers your feedback, help them refine their designs. You say, this is the one I want. You pay for your favorite. You need fresh marketing collateral? 99 Designs offers all kinds of marketing design. Get a sleek, affordable mailing email template or a banner ad, or get infographics made, vehicle wrap design, landing pages, menus. 99 Designs offers landing pages starting at just $299. It's really affordable. Here's some of the contests going on right now. 99 Designs has paid out millions to designers all over the world. They've helped people like you and me who are creators but don't maybe have that great design sense make our stuff sing, make our stuff look good. We got our t-shirt design there. It was just fabulous. Currently, there are 1,912 open contests at 99 Designs. Last month, 99 Designs paid designers $1.8 million, $64.5 million total over the life of it. Right now, if you visit 99designs.com/TRI, you'll get a $99 power pack of services absolutely free. That way, you get more designer time, more designer attention. They'll bold, highlight, and feature your design product in the 99 Designs marketplace. That way, you get nearly twice as many designs. 99designs.com/TRI. We thank them so much for their support for Triangulation. So it's pretty obvious that the Xbox One
and the PS4 are both very strong contenders in the console wars, and that it's more about promise for the future than what we can do with them today.
Yes.
Although I love my Xbox One, and I feel like the living room features are very interesting, and that Kinect that watches me all the time, that's pretty amazing.
I mean, there's a novelty to it that I think is going to kind of carry the Xbox One through that, you know, probably the next couple of months where we're not going to see a lot of games coming out. I think that's the biggest challenge Sony created for themselves is they have a great box, people are excited about it, but without sort of a consistent rollout of games, it's, you know...
It doesn't feel like there's any compelling reason to buy a PS4 yet. Wait for that. Yeah. Wait for Watch Dogs or whatever it is you want to play.
With the $100 extra on the Xbox One, I don't even know if there's a compelling reason for that, but at least you get
to
play around.
There's something to do with it.
There's a little bit to do. I mean, I've said time and time again, people were making their pre-orders right after E3. And I said, you're not buying a console. You're buying a story.
That's
exactly
right.
We just don't know. And obviously, Sony had the best story because they had the most amazing press conference at E3.
Right.
When they just pivoted and just counterattacked.
Right.
As someone who's covered this industry for that long, I was finally like, ooh, this got excited.
Yeah.
But I realized...
What was Sony's message? It seemed to me, as a mainstream tech journalist, it's about the games.
It was about the games, but we're listening to the gamers. So, obviously, they were just so emphatic about no DRM, you don't have to have the online connection.
See, that seemed disingenuous to me, because I figured they're going to do this. Microsoft and Sony have the same economic constraints.
They also had the same policies. As I asked questions of Sony in the ensuing days, they were only really speaking about the used games, about their games. That is the only, in their policies, in their terms
because
and conditions.
Because you still have EA doing the same thing on both platforms.
It's just exactly.
You can't get away from that.
And they just were so good at that messaging.
Yeah.
And that when Microsoft tried to explain themselves, whoever thought that you should put 100 lawyers and 100 marketers in a room and come out with an FAQ like that? it was insane. I mean, I read it. I'm like, they're telling the truth, but they're not explaining it.
Isn't that ironic? Because, of course, it was Microsoft that got all the heat for saying things like, well... if you're in a submarine.
That line from Don Matrick.
Yeah.
I think what you saw there was the exasperation at them not getting their message through. And
they didn't help things.
No, they didn't help themselves at all. But, oh, wow, that was...
It was very tone-deaf.
That was...
Yeah.
They
backtrack and Matrick's gone.
Yeah, Matrick's gone. They backtracked.
They responded to that.
No, and I think if they maintain that level of that they're still connected to the community and they're listening to what they're saying, they really can start to weather this. I think they're slowly getting out of the storm that really was of their own making.
Are you going to go to the E3 this year?
Yeah, I'll be there.
For Revision 3?
Yeah.
Is it a different experience? Because, man, we were at E3 a couple of years ago. And they were going, out of the way, this is where Adam and Morgan are going to be.
Oh, I know.
We've got the stage set up.
It was
a big deal. You guys were superstars.
We were the official G4 broadcaster. It was like there were other television stations clamoring.
We had to get permission from G4 to cover it.
That's right. For live continuous broadcast from the floor.
Yeah.
That's what we had ownership over. Yep. That's right. It was kind of nice. I think the one thing I liked about E3 is it would be just a lot of work, about 5 hours. And all I had to do was that work. Whereas now for this E3, there's a lot. Like I'm having to do a lot more in the case of the day. But also, I get to be more laid back. I get to do the demo for the length of the demo. We were held to 7.5 minutes for the demo.
It's kind of nice
E3.
To have more time, isn't it?
Just for whatever that the game itself merits.
What it merits.
Although there was one demo that was 40 minutes long. About minute 25, I'm like, I'm out of things to ask about this game.
That's fine, too. It didn't merit 40 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, it was... I kind of like the more down-to-earth...
Me too.
...what life I'm leading now. It's just there's something very corrupting about L.A. and getting in front of the camera.
Yeah.
And I think I did a fairly good job of reminding myself of that. But once I got back up here, I realized how much more it really had affected me.
Yeah.
When you realize that you're having a conversation with someone... And you probably are talking about what you're actually talking about. It was really like,
there's no
whoa,
subtext.
That's a new one.
There's no subtext.
When you walk into a restaurant in San Francisco and you notice not everyone turns their head to look at you.
Oh.
And I used to be the guy who was like, better scope out. Who walked
in? Who's in there? Who's there? What are you looking forward to the games that are coming on the Xbox One and PS4? I'm excited about Watch Dogs. That looks good. You probably have a lot more.
I mean, I'm definitely excited for it. The fact that they delayed it,
does it
less
you?
Than a month does kind of raise a flag for me.
Yeah.
On PS4, Infamous Second Son. It's the game I wish they had had it launched.
I loved that, Infamous.
This would have defined
the system.
And
that was a good demo at their...
And it's a nice big open world game.
Right.
I think it'd be great. Titanfall for the Xbox One. I am not an online shooter kind of guy. And I thought it was because I just didn't want to shoot online much. I think I realized I'm just a little fatigued with shooting other people in poor countries. And so with Titanfall, it's like... You have a jetpack, and there's giant robots. Oh, that's fun.
What could be wrong
with
that?
That's a lot of fun. And I think what's most interesting, it's being made by the original Call of Duty team. It's now Respawn,
right.
But it's the ones who left. Right. And that they created the military online shooter genre and are taking such a drastic change in terms of tone, I think is very telling, and I think it's hopeful for the games of this generation.
What about the non-shooter independents? I'm thinking of Journey and things like
those
that.
Cross fingers, this is going to be the best aspect of this generation of consoles.
I hope so.
Sony came right out of the gate with this kind of, we love the independents, we're going to support them.
Yep.
Microsoft actually has a similar program. They put out a release today about some of the designers that are coming on. There were names on it I wasn't expecting to see.
Good.
Double Fine, Tim Schafer's company in San Francisco.
Yeah, I love Double Fine.
Capybara, which is an incredible developer that's up in Canada. I think that's going to be such an important ecosystem because the experimentation that happens in these games is our best shot to see some of those aspects in that game design start to filter up into the big budget games. Because
I'm so sick of shooters. I can't shoot another thing.
Just, there's so many action games where it's like, I've been here before.
Yeah.
I don't know
it really feels that way, doesn't it?
I mean, I'm running out of new ways to say redundant in my reviews. And then you play a game like Brothers. That was it was available. I think it's available on PC, PS3, and Xbox 360. Papers, Please, or what? It's just such a phenomenal game, which is Gone Home. It's just like, wow, something just happened here.
Right.
And suddenly my heart's beating. I'm excited.
That's
really what's exciting me the most this year.
Yeah.
There's Last of Us, and there was Bioshock Infinite.
Well, I liked Last of Us quite a bit. That was very emotional.
But I mean, those two, and I really did like Grand Theft Auto 5. Those are the three games I really can recall and have fresh memories
the
of.
The rest of them are very...
Yeah. But I remember all of these indie games that just got me
they
so
really
enthusiastic.
Get in your mind.
Yeah.
How about the let's talk about the Steam Box. Does Valve have a shot?
They have something. Valve is such a mercurial, enigmatic, yet very clever company. Where is Valve's risk in this? They have an OS. They have a Linux-based OS.
Right. And others are going to make the hardware.
The other ones are going to be making it, and they license.
Right.
So, I mean,
it's a flop, it doesn't cost them much.
No,
right?
And at the end of the day, you have a high-end PC. What I don't fully understand, and you might have more insight, is if it's called a Steam Box, and let's say it doesn't, that this platform doesn't become viable, do you still have a powerful PC you could put Windows on? You could
That's
put
a good
another
question.
Operating
I don't
system
know.
On.
It's a Linux box with a lean back experience. It's designed for your TV.
I mean, it is. I'm interested to see more of it. It's something I think it really depends upon how well Microsoft and Sony will be able to serve that audience. Can they get these boxes out at a competitive price point?
Right.
Because
that's what's hard. I mean.
Yeah.
Even with a benchmark as high as $500, even then it's hard to make
it's
something
very, very hard.
That really is competitive.
I mean, $500 is what most people spend on a high-end graphics card.
And,
so.
And as we know, Microsoft and Sony don't make any money on these machines. They're basically a cost.
Both of them actually are already profitable. Much more so, believe it or not.
Really?
Sony sounds like it's more profitable right now than
that's
Microsoft.
Interesting.
And you know which console is not profitable? It's the Nintendo Wii U. And Nintendo was always making money. They never sent something to market they couldn't be making money on immediately.
Right.
So it's just kind of, we just went through the looking glass in terms
how
of that.
How odd. Yeah. How odd. How about these kind of alternative things like the Ouya? What do you think of that? It's Android gaming.
I've come across as this kind of Grinch who's just beating up on the lowly little Ouya. I think what... The controller is quite horrible. There are some interesting games that are coming out, but it's not being positioned correctly. It doesn't seem to know how to find its audience. And it goes back to what I was saying, that people are buying a story. The excitement around it was like, we're sticking it to the big guys with this independent thing. And I think some people got a little bit carried along with... it's a wonderful myth. But there are practical realities about bringing something like that to market.
Right.
And I think everyone needs to get in a room, kind of really evaluate what the potential of the Android platform is, and really make it work. Stop rushing things out that just continually even give me the impression that I'm losing confidence that, you know, that we can really move in that direction.
Right, right. Somebody in the chat room wants to know about bringing up Nick. Tell us
yes,
about that.
Yes, this was a show just born of inspiration, as I was telling you before. It has nothing to do with video games, but I think it has everything to do with video games. There's a young gentleman, I would put him in his very, very early 20s, named Nick, who works with us. And it became increasingly clear. I'm like one of the oldest guys at Revision 3, and he's one of the youngest.
Okay.
And I realized that he doesn't have any understanding of the pop culture that informs the way that I see the world. He has not seen a movie like Aliens. He has not seen a movie like Die Hard. He has not seen a movie like Raiders of the Lost Ark. And all of that stuff is obviously so important to video games.
Right.
And so we decided it would be fun, and we did it as a quick experiment to do a show where we start the show with him telling me what he thinks the game's about. I mean, the movie. The movie. Right. And in a couple of cases, he is so off base, it's hysterical.
Yeah.
And then we watch the movie, and then we just sit around and we talk. And I get to have the fun of seeing something that is like, I mean, it's just so endemic to just everything I say and do through a pair of fresh eyes. And I just absolutely love the show. I know a lot of people want to see more of it.
They do. They're asking. And are we going to see more? There's Nick.
We are. So this is him guessing what Die Hard is about. he was actually pretty close.
Yeah, it's Christmas.
It's definitely a holiday. Severus Snape is in there. He kidnaps almost everyone, including his girlfriend, but he doesn't get Bruce. Bruce is in the vents. Bruce sneaks through the vents.
He takes the guards out.
He gets the machine guns. He gets all their machine guns. He leaves them a sign saying, I took all your guns. And then he shoots Snape in the face, saves his girlfriend outside the cop.
Alan Rickman, who is the bad guy.
Yeah.
But that's how he knows him.
He was pretty good on this one.
He actually surprised me.
Aliens, he is so off base. It's just one of the most wonderful things in the world.
And this is a great idea for
a
show.
So we definitely want to revisit it. Just so everyone knows, I think our output at Rev 3 Games, and I think I'd like to say our quality, would give the impression that we have a small army. And we really are
four people. Yeah.
And we did that as an experiment to see if we could bring people to the Revision 3 site rather than YouTube. And it's something that we do plan to revisit. It's kind of a 2014 objective.
That's a big challenge, isn't it?
To get back there.
YouTube's where all the people are.
YouTube's where all the people are, and the better revenue is going to obviously come from your own server.
Right.
So we
have the opposite problem. We keep saying, how can we get more people to watch our YouTube stuff? Nobody wants to watch.
Well, I mean, it's great. I think probably as of right now or in a few hours, we're going to cross 400,000 subscribers.
That's great.
On our YouTube channel. And when I started last year, I think we were hovering around 50. So, I mean, we're seeing those numbers, but it's like, okay, there's always that sense of uncertainty when you're using somebody else's technology.
Yeah, you don't know.
As a foundation
you're
for your business model. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you used the Oculus Rift? What do you think of that?
It works. It's cool. Yeah. My issue with the Oculus Rift has nothing to do with the technology. I don't know if it can really be sold. There's a liability risk.
Right.
You are in a sensory deprivation chamber, and
you don't know what's going to happen.
You can give the manual and say, please move your coffee table, anything near you. But when I played it, it was fun. When I first got to see the technology, it was with John Carmack. He kind of found me at E3, and he's like,
now
Adam,
working
I want to show
for
this
them.
To you.
He's now quit his job at it and is working
and
for
it. I was trying it out with what at the time was Doom 3, and I started about as close to the television screen as I am to you. I ended up like over there falling over.
Yeah, see, that's risky.
Yes, you could play it sitting down, but once again, I don't know if they can find, you know, there's just certain legal issues and risks involved that may make it very hard to bring it to market, but... Having said that, it works, it's awesome, and I think they're really... I think the VR thing is going to be a very serious aspect of this next generation.
Somebody wants me to ask you about Lumberjack Man.
Lumberjack Man. So
is this your movie?
If you go to lumberjackmanmovie.com, I didn't direct it, I am in it. I don't want to say too much more. It is modeled after a classic 1980s horror movie. It has a lot of comedy in it. The way I look in the movie is has definitely gotten a lot of people's attention. I play the head counselor of a church camp.
Uh-huh.
Which, yeah, they were sure casting for type, weren't they, Leo?
You're the first person. We need... Oh, we can't afford somebody like Adam Sessler. Let's get Adam Sessler.
Yeah. Okay. So I don't want to say too much more. It's being shopped around for a distributor, so obviously if there's anyone watching.
It was made in Austin.
It was made in Austin, yeah. Who is a film distributor. You know, they should definitely contact the people on the website. But it's something that I would love for people to see because
fun.
I had a blast making it. Michael Madsen is in it.
Oh.
And it's a horror movie. I love horror movies. And so it was, I finally got to converge like many things that I've always wanted to do.
I love it. Well, Adam, I'm so thrilled that you are still doing what you're doing. You're
I'm glad you're still doing this. So.
Yeah, I guess I am too. But you're younger than me, so you have more life.
Yes, but my soul is older.
Yeah, your soul is probably a lot older. Somebody wants me to ask you about Dick Dick. This is the funniest moment of any moment on...
This is the one. I can hear Karsten laughing back there.
Yeah, he remembers it.
There's a game, Ultimate Muscle. It was... So there's a character in Ultimate Muscle called Dick Dick Van Dick. It's funny. And so I just started to say Dick Dick a lot. Now, you know, a Dick Dick is an actual animal.
It's a tiny little...
No, it's like an antelope. But it's antelope. It's like you took a shrink gun on an antelope.
Right, yeah, yeah.
So I would just say it a lot. It's kind of like that juvenile thing, like as long as it's an animal, I can say it on
TV.
And that one, it just sort of just caught on like wildfire as a catchphrase.
It's your catchphrase. Dick Dick.
Dick Dick.
Somebody says, the funniest thing I ever saw on Tech TV. Dick Van Dick.
And the thing is, I think I always felt a little bit guilty because it was someone else's idea to call the character.
Not even
that.
Your fault.
No.
Not even
it
your
was just my job to say it
fault.
Out loud.
Just your job. Adam, so great to talk to you. People should go to Revision 3 Games. It's youtube.com/ Rev3Games, or should they just go to the website?
They can go to either. Right now, we're just kind of pushing people because I want to. I love big round numbers. So I
you
want to
get a
I want to hit that 400,000.
All right.
So I think I'm allowed to see my family if we do that. So.
do you have kids?
No. It's just me and my lovely wife here in San Francisco. Look.
Is she happy to move up here?
Yes, very, very much so. Yeah. I'm an emotional juvenile.
Probably shouldn't have any kids. They are now at 397,984 views. You have 399,144 subscribers.
So we're almost up to that 400K on the subscribers.
I think right now, if everybody who's watching right now goes to youtube.com/rev3games and subscribes, I'm going to subscribe. That we could probably put it over 400,000 so that you can go home tonight and see your family.
Yes, exactly.
So let's do that.
500,000, I get cold water.
Looks like you're getting it right there.
Yeah, that was my favorite, was me stapling my crotch. It was... Sorry.
It must be the Dick Dick in here. Looks like the Pulitzer Prize is safe for another year.
Thank you, Adam. It's great to see
my
you
pleasure.
Again.
Thank you so much.
We do triangulation every Wednesday afternoon. Actually, we've got a couple of special triangulations coming up. We're going to do one tomorrow. What time, Karsten? 4 o'clock? Yeah, we're going to have the founder of IDEO on, which will be a lot of fun, David Kelly. And then Saturday, we're going to do another one with Peter Krog, my old friend, and photographer who is the creator of the Dam book, is all about digital asset management and an expert on keeping track of your stuff. So some extra special pre-records coming up tomorrow, Thursday, and Saturday. Our schedule is on the calendar at twit.tv. And then, of course, every Wednesday, around about 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time. Let's see, that would be 2200 UTC on twit.tv. Please stop by and watch live. But if you can't, we have on-demand versions available in audio and video. twit.tv/TRI. Thanks for joining me. I'll see you next time on Triangulation.